a Jerry Piffin special. Dulce, what's really going on? Hi, we're from Angel Fire in New Mexico, and near here, there's a very mysterious place. It's referred to in ufology as Dulce, and we'll find out what's happening. We have joining us today Anthony Sanchez, who drove all the way in from California, and he has a new book out that we'll be talking about in a moment, and our good friend Norio Hayakawa, who drove up from a suburb of Albuquerque. And Norio, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jerry.
And Dennis Balthizer will be joining us later. And Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, the name of your book is intriguing. Tell everybody about that.
The name of the book is UFO Highway.
And why did you come up with that title?
Well, initially when I started writing the book, it had nothing to do with Dulce. The book was to be about two core areas that I've specialized in for years now, which are the HARP and Project Bluebeam conspiracy, and alien-human hybridization with respect to human origins. And I also conducted an interview with Jorg Arnu of Area 51, and I found that although I was diverging into multiple areas of UFO research, I kept finding myself back on the same road. And I found that all these different aspects of ufology were interconnected. So I decided to call the book UFO Highway.
So all highways lead to the UFO answer?
That's correct.
And so it's just not about the only highway that's reserved for extraterrestrial highway in the world, and that's Nevada.
Rachel, Nevada.
It goes up to Area 51 to Rachel. And Norio Hayakawa, you're no stranger there.
That's right. I had lots of amazing experiences. And in 1991, a bunch of us, about a six-car caravan, were dangerously harassed by unmarked military helicopter while we were driving on a public dirt road. And it became a news item in a UFO magazine in 1991. So, yes, I'm familiar with that highway. It's a lot of things happened at Highway 375, and now the highway is officially named the Extraterrestrial Highway, the only highway.
You listened to Billy Goodman years ago on KVEG out of Las Vegas, same station I was on. And I've got to tell you something, Norio. Last week, I got a call from Gloria Euphoria. Remember her, his assistant?
I see, yes, I remember.
She went up to Area 51, I think, when you guys went up to that bus tour.
Yes, that's right. That's a long time ago.
A long
time ago, when hardly Area 51 wasn't even a household.
Even
yeah,
no
that's
one
right.
Knew about Groom Lake even.
That's right. That was 1989.
Yeah, and Billy, I guess they chartered a bus or something, and they went up there. And
that's right.
So, Gloria was talking to me a little bit about that trip, and she still has some videos about it.
Yes.
Now, Anthony Sanchez, speaking of videos, you seem to have a pretty good ability about getting videos and photographs and things like that. You have a background in computers.
I have a degree in computer information systems. I've been programming since I was 10 years old, but I started programming in a professional capacity at about 1994 when I was 24 years old. And I've worked for companies like Intel Corporation, NEC, Hewlett-Packard. I've worked for your top companies in mostly in the software engineering capacity. So, I have a real strong computer background.
I'm remiss if I didn't ask you, when is that book coming out? December?
In December. So it should be out in the middle to the end of December.
Just in time for everybody to order for Christmas.
I hope so.
Norio, you don't seem to sell things. You give away things. Your CDs and everything else.
Well, actually, Jerry, my philosophy is to distribute information to the public where it's needed. And my philosophy is that I personally just don't, you know, have the resources to publish anything at this time. More than that, I'm a person who likes to give out information to the public. That's the main goal. And that's why I'm so excited about telling the people that there is a new, brand new information concerning the alleged Dulce facility. And this came just this year from Mr. Sanchez's amazing interview with an Air Force colonel that took place this year in January in California. And this is a dramatic revelation of the reality that there is a facility in Dulce. No question about it.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Anthony, is that, what do you call this colonel? Colonel X?
I give him the name Colonel X.
Colonel Z or what? I mean,
we're not using his name. In fact,
there's a reason for that.
There's a definite reason for it. The name he goes by today is not even his original name. When he retired from the military in 1983, starting his family, he actually changed his appearance, changed his name, and he's living a very, very anonymous lifestyle now, so under a new identity. But I'm probably one of the few people that know his real name, his social security number from his previous identity when he was employed by the United States military.
And so in other words, you verified that he...
I have verified it. I have with me the DD-214 that, with the colonel's permission, we got from the custodian of military records. And by filing the standard Form 180, we were able to get the military discharge papers. And the reason why we did that was because I am aware of a lot of incidents whereas people will approach UFO researchers, give them false information, and have them perpetuate a hoax for a long period of time. Our good friend Dennis Balthaser was subject to one such event, and I'm trying to avoid that. This is the reason why I called Norio Hayakawa in on this project back in, I believe it was March, because I received the information in January, and I wasn't convinced because I never believed in the Phil Schneider story. I never believed in the Jason Bishop Tal story that's available online, the Bruce Allen Walton, the Branton stories. They just didn't. There was something about those stories that was unbelievable for me. So when this person approached me through another one of my insider sources who had previously done work as part of the military-industrial complex, I was very skeptical. So I contacted Norio Hayakawa because of his expertise in Dulce and his skeptical nature of the subject, and I took various steps. First thing I did was I had the colonel submit to two polygraph examinations. I hired a private investigator who's a retired law enforcement officer. He's now a private investigator in Northern California. And he conducted two polygraph examinations for me, and the colonel passed both of them. And then we submitted a standard Form 180, received his discharge papers, his DD-214, and he told me, when you get my discharge papers, there is a clue on there that you need to look for, and when you find it, you need to research it, and that will give you your validation. So when we received the DD-214 under section 18, which is the remarks area, which is a very important part of the DD-214, I found the clue. I found the clue that he was referencing to. There was a military personnel designation of 14N4, which I looked up, and it had something to do with an intelligence specification. After that, it said staff, Rio Arriba CO, comma DSD hyphen 3. So Rio Arriba CO stood for Rio Arriba County. And so I contacted two independent custodians of military records, one in Maryland and one in Louisiana. When I asked the custodian in Maryland what Rio Arriba CO stood for in DSD-3, they said they'd never heard of it. When I asked the custodian in Louisiana, they said that's classified and that they don't even have a definition for it, but that it's classified. So I called up the Dulce Township and spoke to several people throughout Dulce trying to find out if there was any type of military establishment there within Rio Arriba County where Dulce is. And they said there's nothing there. So I said, well, is there a recruiting office? Because maybe he was a recruiter and he's making up the story. They said there is no recruiting office there. There hasn't been a military presence in Rio Arriba County since the Calvary was last there. So this is what I had been able to ascertain from these discharge papers. It's very important.
This is just amazing, and this is a definitive proof that this person, the colonel, was a staff of Rio Arriba County DSD-3, and he received a full retirement merited under special order for DSD-3 service. And there's no question in my mind that this is an authentic document, and he verified everything. By the way, Jerry, when I held the first underground base conference last year in 2009 in March in Dulce, apparently this gentleman, the Air Force Colonel, was in attendance. He testified in the interview with Anthony Sanchez.
Yeah, I remember when you were having that, I had you on the phone direct from there, and I asked you if anybody of importance is there, and you said, I think there are many people here that are...
Yes, in fact, he confirmed that there was there were two AFOSI personnel there in the audience. And then he also confirmed the presence of a strange military helicopter.
Yeah, that thing was early in the morning.
Yeah, early at 6 a.m. He confirmed in an interview.
Yeah, at 5:55 a.m., the colonel says that he was in his car with his wife and they were having coffee, and above the Best Western Jicarilla, the inn, there were two helicopters that had arrived simultaneously. One hovered over the inn while the other circled the area scanning various vehicles, including the vehicle that they were sitting in. And the other one, so the one circling the area scanning departed, the one hovering remained for a couple more minutes, and then they both disappeared. And when I asked him if it was possible that these helicopters were a part of the intelligence division that he had been a part of, DSD-3, he said yes. Those were most likely helicopters, not from the Office of Special Investigations, AFOSI. They were more likely from the Dulce.
In other words, DSD-3.
Now, Norio and Anthony, there's no doubt in either of your minds that there's something going on at Dulce. I mean, something top secret.
No question about it. I was just in Dulce about 10 days ago, and a good friend of mine now, former Highway Patrol officer Gabe Valdez, he even goes to the Dulce area to conduct his ongoing investigations into Dulce. He definitely says that there is something there. There's no question in my mind that some kind of a military presence and some kind of a cover-up is being conducted in this mysterious location called Dulce.
Now, Anthony's going to get into what he found out about what that cover-up might be. And I know, Norio, you and I've talked about it, and we all know the Phil Snyder story, and we kind of dismissed that, but Anthony seems to have some evidence. Has he convinced you? You're open-minded about it?
I'm very open-minded. In fact, my position is that we should weigh everything carefully and always leave the door open, halfway open, to accommodate any possible, situation.
So, Anthony, and as you reveal the story, I think people can make their own mind up here, but it appears to me it might be all of the above. It is a U.S. government deal. There might be some biological stuff going on, and there also is this extraterrestrial.
That's a very interesting point. So I have to preface this by saying that this was amazing when I first heard it. I was not inclined to believe any of it until I had the chance to speak with an expert. That's why I chose Norio for this, because he knows a lot about the background. He was on UFO hunters, he was profiled on UFO hunters, and a whole bunch of he has a whole bunch of experience in researching Dulcie. So the testimony that I gathered from this colonel during our interview, he claims that in 1940 there was a group called the Muroc Expedition, which came out of Muroc Army Airfield, which is Edwards Air Force Base today. They were sent there as part of an expedition. They were a ground crew complementing a pilots who were surveying Nevada, New Mexico for our future atomic development. And the book goes into detail about this. But they found a massive cavern there in Dulcie at the Archuleta Mesa. That cavern's not there anymore. The cavern was covered up at some point, and I'll get into that later. It's not unlike the caverns you see when you're driving in from northern Arizona into New Mexico. There's massive caverns. I saw plenty of them on the way in as I drove in. This is exactly what he described to me. And he says that these soldiers from the Muroc expedition had gone in, and they had found some very, very interesting artifacts. They found remains, and they found evidence of a fight that had occurred there. Interestingly enough, a fight that had occurred there a while back, quite a while back. And so it was a very interesting aspect to the story. And this is kind of what stood out to me that made me want to show some interest in this story, because it was nothing like I had ever heard about Dulcie that is widely available on the internet right now, which talks about reptilians and things of that net nature. This has nothing to do with that. This is more grounded, with a more earthly type explanation as to why we're there, why we're performing work there, and why we work with people, the inhabitants that they found there. So what they found inside this cavern were remains of Apache warriors. They found remains. They were able to determine that the remains were from between the years 1840 and 1870. They were able to corroborate that by the fact that they found Colt revolvers, Winchester repeater rifles, and spent and unspent ammunition strewn about. They also found blades, Apache-style blades. They could tell by the wrapping, the leather wrapping, and there was a whole bunch of different explanations as to why they were able to determine these were indeed Apache warriors that they found in there. Next to the Apache remains, but further in, he claims that they found, now these are the soldiers of the Muroc expedition who found this, small diminutive remains of these, they were human-like, they had larger heads, they had huge eye sockets, and they were everywhere. And there was obviously some type of a battle that had ensued some time ago. As they went deeper into the cavern, they began to find evidence of machines. You have to keep in mind that this is 1940. There were no laptops. There were no personal recording devices. So the soldiers were told to keep journals. Typically in those days, you would have a commanding officer or an officer with one or two soldiers assigned to handwriting in a journal of what they found. And this is exactly what they did. And Colonel X found all of this evidence in the briefing documents that were provided to him in 1979, when he was told to report to Edwards Air Force Base en route to a base he had never heard of, somewhere called Dulcie, New Mexico. And actually, it wasn't referred to as a base. It was referred to as a scientific auxiliary. So there's a lot more detail that I could go into, but essentially, that's the crux of the story. He operated out of McClellan Air Force Base near Sacramento, California, part of a larger medical unit, but a small specialized detachment that responded to Type X events, as he called them. And these would involve incidents of a UFO nature, but only if there was an accident or if there was a death of military personnel. And he recalls a story that occurred near Fort Irwin to give me an example of exactly what he's referring to. His job was to conduct a real simple protocol, four-step protocol, conduct an initial, some type of a behavioral assessment, psychological assessment on the spot. If these people are not fit to return to duty, they receive an immediate medical discharge, no questions asked, answered, you know. It's a very strict group that he belonged to. So he says that in 79, he received this packet with the new set of orders, and what was different about these is that they were labeled Department of Energy, and he had never seen that before, and it also had this specialized compartmented information stamp on there, which is something he had not seen before. Now, he had always dealt with all of the events that he dealt with were classified, these Type X events, but this one in particular stood out to him, because it had a orders to immediately report to Edwards Air Force Base en route to Dulce, where something had occurred 48 hours earlier, which triggered a set of protocols enacting a demilitarized zone.
Are you saying that it was 1979?
It's 1979. Now, what's interesting about that is this correlates to this Phil Schneider business, whereas Phil Schneider came about in the early to mid-90s talking about his involvement in a battle that occurred there. Now, according to the testimony provided by the colonel, about 90% of that information that was being espoused by Phil Schneider on the lecture circuit was false. But he confirms that Phil Schneider was indeed working at Dulce under a geological specification for a subcontractor, it's part of a federal contractor, to a prime called URS Corp. He was there under a geological specification doing geological work. So that is interesting to note. What is also interesting is the colonel said that there were 23 people that were unaccounted for after these hostilities had occurred there in 1979. Phil Schneider was one of those 23 people. He doesn't understand why, but when he resurfaced in 1995, he started making these claims about what had happened there in Dulce. But his supposition is this. He says he thinks that Phil Schneider latched on to this story that was being propagated by Bob Lazar about this event. Now, Bob Lazar never claimed where it occurred, but there was this event where there was hostilities between Greys, or extraterrestrials, as he put it, and Delta Force type of, you know, special ops soldiers. Now, the colonel, when I interviewed him, said he believes that Phil Schneider was trying to associate himself to that event for purposes of sensationalism and to draw greater attention to what occurred with him in Dulce.
That's very important, Jerry, because everybody has heard about the so-called 1975 altercation between unknown entities and, you know, U.S. Delta forces. But this idea or this claim was first brought out by none other than Bob Lazar in 1989. So by 1995, in my opinion, Phil Schneider probably has heard about Bob Lazar's claim that there was an altercation, but Bob Lazar, when he came out with this statement in 1989, never mentioned that this altercation took place whether at Groom Lake or at other facility. He never mentioned it. So my take is that, yes, Phil Schneider started talking about it in 1995, and, you know, perhaps, but, you know, there's some truth to that he may have been part of, you know, that crew or geological crew.
Let's play a little bit of Phil Schneider, the late Phil Schneider, telling about this altercation.
The unbelievable part, I was involved in building another base inside of Dulce, New Mexico, which is Los Alamos Laboratory. It's a biological laboratory. On the southwest part of the Archuleta Mesa, we built an underground facility, a better part of 3 cubic miles hollowed out underground. Then to the southwest of that, we were in the process of the early stages of building. We drilled 4 large tunnel-like holes. Some of them ran 2.5 miles under surface. At that time, number of the original wells or drilling machines that were used were at the rate of 2 miles a day. It was fairly rapid. The equipment kept coming up broken. So we wanted to go down, we wanted to send somebody down there, a human observer, or human observers in this case, to find out what was going on. Well, to our total surprise, first of all, the government knew all about it. They didn't tell anybody. When I saw Green Beret and Black Beret people encamped inside of our geologist's camp, I knew something was up. The large alien grays had been encamped there for as best as believed possible about 400 or 500 years. It had been one of their internal bases. And we'd drilled holes right on top of it. All the stinking air, all the black sooty air came right out as soon as the first hole was sunk and all this soot came up. And well, that's when it all the hell broke loose, really, all it started. Anyway, after we drilled all four holes, it took about 2 days to drill all four of them. And when you build a underground base, you drill four basic holes, and then you build called stopes or cross-member holes across, and then you use blasting equipment, you know, special blasting equipment by the analyzation of the rock formation, and you literally blast out or tunnel out or deflagrate or melt rock out to build the large rooms that are required for this underground base. Well, in this process, I was lowered down the basket of one of these holes, and about from me to this elderly woman here in the front was sitting a 7-foot-tall alien gray. The stench was worse than the worst garbage can you can imagine. The person was the entity was absolutely horrible. I didn't waste any time. I reached for my pistol. At that time, as an engineer, I didn't have time to carry all the folder, all of one of these big submachine guns that all the sea spray and the yellow fruit and all the outer perimeter and inner perimeter security people carried. I carried old Walther PPK pistol with a 9-shot clip. This was in late August of 1979. Now, you got a regular suit of clothes, you got a regular clothes on, plus you're in a almost like a spacesuit environment, and you're reaching for a gun. It's not the easiest thing to do, and then to pop a clip in it and start shooting. And I killed two of them. Yes, they're mortal, and they do die.
Right back at Angel Fire Resort with more about Dulce and what's going on. I'm Jerry Pippin.